Doing it the easy way. That's just not how Cambridge United do it. Another defeat on Saturday and our fate goes down to the final week, knowing that a win on Tuesday can finally confirm League One football for another season and save a potentially agonising game on the final day of the season. With that cheery intro, joining me, Julian Roberts, for another cheery pod is cheerful Tom Walker. How are you, mate? Feeling cheerful?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm good. this time, a couple of weeks ago, we were quite confident that 46 points would be enough.
Yeah. We kept talking about not testing the theory, didn't we? That it was enough. And here we are.
Really putting it
testing
through,
that.
Putting it through its paces, I think is fair to say. Oh, it's horrible, isn't it?
It's really horrible. We're obviously always delighted to be joined by friend of the pod, Matt Gooding. Matt, I was just thinking about whether you being on the pod is a good or bad omen from your previous appearances and whether we'd won the game we were talking about. But to be honest, in the past couple of seasons, we've lost so many games. I've sort of just assumed that we did. So I think you might be a bad omen, mate.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have my appearance record to hand, but last time I was on, we just won 4-0 against Carlisle. Remember that?
Brilliant.
Back
Brilliant.
In the,
I think I was away, yeah. so
that's why there you go.
Okay, great.
That did precede
Niall
Taylor getting sent off and Neil Harris leaving, though. So it's not a great defence, to be fair.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I didn't think of that angle on it. But nonetheless, delighted to be here as always. Yeah.
No, pleasure to have you, mate. That's a good point, though, Tom. Anyway, let's skip over that and let's go straight to the latest of our sort of agonising defeats as we limp towards the line. Cambridge United 0, Derby County 1 on Saturday. Tom, what did you make to the game, mate? Tight one.
Yeah, it was tight. And I think the kind of overriding positive, I guess, if you like, is obviously Cheltenham's result, I guess. But also, I think it kind of follows a theme of what we spoke about against Blackpool and after the game against Bristol Rovers and to an extent the game against Charlton, which is that we are competing a lot better than we have been in sort of weeks and months gone before. And that's good. And it's a strange one to kind of pick apart because I think that a lot of the criticisms that we'll have are basically the same as what we spoke about in the, you know, sort of previous games, essentially just a lack of a regular ability to create good quality chances and really put these sides like Derby and like Blackpool, who are sort of towards the top end of the table, through their paces and make them think that they've really, really properly come away knowing that they're in a game. And I think we're competing in the sense that there's a lot of huff and puff. There's a lot of desire, I think, which is, you know, don't underestimate that. I think that was really missing, you know, in that spell while Barry Corr was manager, not because of Barry Corr, of course, but just because of the situation. And then, you know, the performances at Lincoln and Reading didn't do much to alleviate any concerns that there was, you know, a lack of application and stuff. And that couldn't be further from the truth now, I think. I guess it's kind of reassuring to think that what's actually letting us down against the better sides in the league is just that we don't have as much quality of that, you know, as they do. And, you know, I think in a cold light of day, you can probably look at that and go, well, that's just kind of how it's going to be for us at this level. But it doesn't make it any less frustrating that you just feel like with just a little bit more quality, a little bit more invention kind of at the top end of the pitch, we could quite easily come away with something from the game against Derby. And, you know, there's always the two parts of it of how do we play and how do they stop us playing or what do they do to make it difficult for us. And, you know, they're second in the league, they're going to get promoted on Saturday. They're a really tough opponent. I think they were just the better side and kind of deserve to win, really. So, yeah, a bit of a frustrating one. Not many new things to say, I think, in some senses, which is always good, I guess.
Yeah, great for an audio-based
analytical
service like this.
Yeah. Cutting edge analysis, innovative.
Matt, where's your stance on it? Because it's interesting, like I've seen a couple of different takes, specifically on the second half with yesterday. I've seen a few people come out of it with a real sort of buoyancy and like a real feeling quite motivated at how we played, because I think for a lot of the reasons that Tom just said, I think I came out of it more frustrated than even Tom said there. I came out of it yes, everything Tom said is, I think, is bang on, but I think I came out of it thinking like it's the same problems again and again. And I still think in these situations, we're not putting it on teams enough and not managing. We didn't create a chance second half, right? And I think to me, third to last game of the season, that's a huge issue that is just becoming a massive frustration. So I think I'm reading it slightly more critically. Where are you at with it?
I wouldn't say I was like, you know, ebullient after the game yesterday. I didn't think like we were amazing. I think, you know, Tom's pretty much hit the nail on the head. We've seen this like film before, haven't we? It was almost exactly the same game that we played against Portsmouth. I don't know if you remember that game earlier in the season, where we were like in it, but just like not really laying a glove on them, but we were sort of competing well, and it was kind of, you know, it was okay. Like, and I think like people's like view of it probably coloured by the sort of way the game went, in the sense that we were sort of hanging on a bit in the first half, weren't we? And they looked really impressive, sort of some of their, just sort of like a normal Paul Warren team, where they can like really build using the wing backs and some really nice sort of ins playing that. And obviously Mendes Lang's really good at this level. Like, so that happened. And then in the second half, they basically just sat back, didn't they? And we had all the ball. And I guess when that happens, it sort of gives you a bit of a more positive sort of spin on the game, because we were at least trying to attack and we were building and we were getting the ball into their area fairly, you know, fairly regularly. But it is the same problem, that we get the ball there, but then in that final third, everything breaks down. We never move the ball quickly enough. We never get enough shots off, or we don't get shots off enough from a good position. Or eventually when we do get a shot off, it just gets blocked because we've faffed about with it for so long. So I wasn't like, I was fairly like happy to see that level of performance, because I feel like if we play like that most of the time, like most teams aren't as good as Derby, and we'll just potter along and we'd pick up enough points to stay up. Clearly the problem like this season has been that our level's dropped below that too regularly, hasn't it? But I feel like I was reasonably positive after it, because I was like, if we could just play like this all the time, we wouldn't be worried, like with two games to go in the season, that we might still get relegated. But that's not to say that everything's fine. Clearly the same problems are still there that have been there all season, and probably some of them that have been there the whole time we've been in League One, you know. So those are going to have to be addressed in the summer, otherwise we're going to end up back in the same position. But I think for where we are at the moment, I think probably as much as you can ask from this squad is to play well against Derby. And, you know, it's hard to say that we deserved a point, because we barely created anything. Like, we'll come on to it, I'm sure. But it didn't feel like we totally deserved to lose it either. And I feel like at this point, that's probably as much as we can ask for from this group of players, knowing what we know about them.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary, to be fair. And I think you are right that, like, if you sort of extrapolate that sort of performance over a season, you are going to pick up a lot of points. But the thing is, we've only got, you know, such a limited amount of games left.
Yeah.
I think I think there's a frustration for me, and definitely a lot of people that I was standing with yesterday, that like we shouldn't still be talking about the fact that we might get relegated, and quite fine, unlikely, but not unrealistic. We're going to come onto the relegation picture later. But I guess that's a frustration, right? So we're constantly just like, maybe yesterday isn't a missed opportunity like Bristol Rovers was, but when, like, you know, when you see, I mean, this is, it's one moment that I think is really sticking with me, which is the 93rd minute, you manage to get your winger on the ball and you get one chance to deliver a ball in the box and he completely overhits the cross. I'm not expecting him to like pick out someone's head perfectly, but like, put it in the box at least, man.
There were two things in the second half of like peak Cambridge United 2023, 2024. One of them was Brophy, like completely overhitting across just for no reason, like just putting the mixer, as you say.
The
other one was Lyle Taylor trying to do an overhead kick from 18 yards and kicking someone in the face. Like, I think that Lyle Taylor loves overhead kicks probably as much as I love my children. He is always trying them. Like,
do you know what was amazing about that is I could see it coming from about the moment he sort of started turning his body. And I was like, here we go.
It's on. Except it obviously isn't on, is it? And it never is. But he'll keep trying. Maybe he'll score the winner against Wickham with an overhead kick.
Yeah, who knows?
I'll eat my words.
Yeah, another set of fans that he can, like, you know, just shit at if he scores, because they seem to all hate him.
Can you imagine how mental he would have gone if he had scored, if he scored a late equaliser that, you know, partly dashes Derby's promotion hopes, and it was an overhead kick.
Yeah,
he got himself sent off. His mind. Yeah.
Anyway, let's rewind a little bit. First half, as you said there, Matt, there was Derby really were putting it on us. I mean, Mendes Lang hits the post with that 30-yard curler, had a beautiful view on it. Like, I thought that was in every day of the week. Rossi nods one onto the post. Actually, quite a good clearance, to be honest. He has to get something on it, so he does quite well. But in general, they were just constantly asking questions of us, putting pressure on us. But Tom, the one moment that actually that they did score from was sort of a little bit of our own creation. I mean, it seems harsh because I've watched it back and I hadn't quite appreciated how good, I think it's Sibley's ball is to Mendes Lang. Like, it's a brilliant pass. It's that sort of moment of quality you get on the break. But for you, Tom, is there a bit of blame at Mannion's door, Liam Bennett's door? Where are you standing on that first goal?
I think I'll probably go down the same route as you, to be honest. I think, yeah, like in the moment when you watch it, you're a bit like, how on earth has this happened? And then when you actually watch the replay back once or twice, like, the quality of the pass is what it sounds obvious, because obviously it's the assist for the goal, but it's what kind of makes that opportunity. And I think if you're looking at it from our side, and if you're trying to kind of apportion blame, you know, you can argue that he's travelled a long way with the ball. So is there someone there that can put a tackle in? Digby's quite a way off him. I think it's Cousins that comes into shot just as he passes the ball. But even then, like, I'm not sure that Cousins sort of charging into that tackle would have been the best thing to do, because there's people off him, and, you know, obviously he's got to kind of protect the space, I guess, a little bit. And then obviously the pass is made, and I think it's Bennett's man who obviously gets away from him a little bit, Mendes Lang. And obviously Mannion's miles out his goal and just basically in no man's land. So from our side, there's probably little bits that could be done better, but I think the quality of the pass is so high that it forces us into doing quite strange things. You know, Liam Bennett doesn't often lose his man in that sort of way. But the ball just like kind of curves in like the right sort of way to allow Mendes Lang just the simplest of runs, really, just to take it around Mannion and just kind of tap it in. So yeah, I think I'm pretty happy to give us the benefit of the doubt on that one. Strangely, I think it's just a really high quality moment from Derby, and, you know, like you say, there were one or two other bits in the first half especially where probably they could and should have scored one or two more to make it a bit more comfortable for them, but that was the telling moment. But I think it's won by their quality rather than it is us sort of defending it really poorly. Obviously, it looks like a mess because of where the goalkeeper ends up and the fact it's rolled into an empty net from like 20 yards out, which the optics of that aren't great, but I think it's fair to just give them a little bit of slack for that, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, to be honest. I think you're right. And as you rightly said, they had enough chances to score. It's not like we can sit here and say it was undeserved. Whereas the other end of the pitch, Matt, as you touched on a second ago, there was only really one chance we created all game. Was a good one, though. I mean, Liam Bennett's done amazingly to dig across that. It was right in front of me as he dug it out. I couldn't believe like the sort of height and the whip he managed to get on it. Hadmi does well. I think he's challenging with the keeper. And then it lands at Bond's feet. And to be honest, I was really critical. I thought he had to score. I thought he's put it right at the keeper. I think maybe watching it back, he does have to spin on it a bit more. It's maybe slightly harder to, because he's got to take it quickly to get direction on it. What do you think? I don't know what view you had, your main stand, right?
No. I was in the premier viewing spot of the Habin North.
The Habin so, North. Yeah. John Morland will be delighted listening to
this. Yeah, absolutely. So
what was your view like of it? What did you think live?
It was lucky that it was at the Newmarket Road end because there was a fence in my way, like blocking the south stand goal, which is a little bit annoying. I think live, I thought, okay, I didn't think it was bad as I thought it was in the replay. So I'm kind of the opposite of you.
Oh, interesting.
Because he does have to turn, but then he hits it like really nice height for the goalkeeper, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He'd kept that down, like no one's stopping that, I don't think.
No,
so it's not the easiest chance you'll ever see, but I think, like, to go back to our point earlier, we don't create a lot of chances. And if we're going to be that team, then those ones need to go in. It's not like... Yeah. It wasn't like a ridiculously difficult one for him either, for a player who has like scored goals at this level before. So, yeah, I was just quite shocked that he couldn't put that away, particularly having seen it on replay. I was a bit like,
yeah,
that definitely should be going in. And
And to be honest, it's one of those chances where, like, you know, a striker's instinct, let's say, like, should just take over, right? And you're right, he has put it at the sort of one, in the one place that the keeper's going to be able to save it, really. So what did you make to Bond's performance yesterday? Because I was pretty surprised to see him stay on the pitch for 90, to be honest. I was sure that Taylor would come on for him and they'd keep Gassan on. What did you make to him?
Yeah, I think Gassan looks a bit out of gas, lol. He looks kind of tired, doesn't he? But despite that, I was quite surprised too. I would agree with you. He was trying, like, and I think the last two games he has been trying, but he's just like, he just doesn't look up to the level, basically, does he? Like, maybe he was once, but he isn't now, and he shouldn't be playing for us, really. Like, I don't mean to be overly harsh, you know, but he just looks like a player who's slightly above the level that he should be at. And I think that shows in his, just some of his touches, some of the link-up play is not what you'd want it to be. So yeah, I was surprised to see him start again. I think I feel like having played the previous Tuesday and not really had that much impact, I thought he'd be out of the team again, but I'm not really keen for him to start the next couple of games, to be honest. I think there's better combinations for us up front, even if Gassan is a bit tired.
Especially when Fajiri's knocking about. I mean, he didn't make the squad yesterday, but before his injury, he was in such good nick, and he looked like, you know, I think we've all agreed that, like, without the injury problems, Fajiri is a real player at this level. So would be interesting to see a bit more from him. Tom, this is the million-dollar question. Why are we so bad at creating chances? I mean, do you put it down to Derby being good defensively yesterday, or is it, again, just the same problems we've talked about specifically in central midfield for us?
I think we've seen it probably a little bit too much and too often to just put it all down to Derby being good defensively. Because we've come up against plenty of sides who aren't as good defensively and aren't as solid and still struggle to create. So I guess in the context of yesterday, like, you are coming up against three of the best centre-halves in the league. And that's obviously really difficult for two strikers who, yeah, like Matt quite rightly says, like, they're off the pace, I think it's fair to say. You know, that doesn't necessarily explain away all the sort of chance creation stuff, because I guess you would argue that the chance creation comes a little bit before it gets to that point, or doesn't come before it gets to that point, I guess, as it's been. I just think it comes from the middle of the park again, and it's something we've spoken about week after week after week, and this isn't necessarily to sit here and dig out Cousins and Digby as much as, you know, we've maybe done in sort of weeks gone by, or even Kachunga. Like, I just don't feel like there's enough coming from that bit of the pitch. I think if you look at the two centre mids specifically, I just don't think that's their quality. I don't think that's their kind of, I don't think creativity is the attribute that's kind of got them to where they are. I think, you know, their games are kind of centered on different bits. And even Kachunga, I guess you could argue, like, maybe people might disagree a little bit, but I guess if you're playing him in the 10 role, I feel his profile is a little bit different from, like, a Lancaster, for example, whose job you kind of feel is just, like, to pick out passes and actually literally create opportunities. Whereas Kachunga feels a little bit more almost sort of between that and a striker. So maybe, you know, you've got three players whose sort of key qualities aren't in actually, like, picking out passes and aren't actually in creating, and that's maybe why there's a bit of a lack of creativity, which I guess would be understandable. But even then, like, you bring onto the pitch, you bring on Kai, you bring on Lancaster, you bring on Brophy, who in theory those three players should be the ones that do that, and it still doesn't really change. In fact, I think if anything, probably got a little bit worse in the second half than it was in the first. Like, we've spoken about Bond's chance there. That's a good opportunity that we did work. But yeah, it's been kind of a theme really of the last few years, and you know, I think you have to put it down really to the level of quality that we've got in the squad at that bit of the pitch, because, you know, we've tried different systems, different shapes, different managers, and the issue of kind of creating chances has remained, and that, I guess, at some point has to just come down to the fact that the players that are on the pitch with responsibility on them to do it aren't quite good enough, and that's something that we'll need rectifying in the summer. Obviously, hopefully that's going into another League One season. And I think, if anything, that's probably our biggest challenge. I think we've shown that we can compete pretty well and try and battle to keep the ball out of our own goal. But what we've consistently failed to do really is put the ball in the back of the opposition. So Yeah. Again, I appreciate it's maybe not the greatest content that I've produced on this podcast over the years, but I don't really have much new to say, to be honest on this, because I feel like we've said it all before.
Yeah.
What?
Go on, Matt.
No, I was going to say, what I think is interesting is that Monk seemed to have identified this and come up with a solution for those two games, like over Easter weekend, where he's like, right, we'll do four of, what is it, whatever. You'll have Digby and Cousins, and then you'll have two, like, tens of Puckfin,
The
basically.
Christmas tree, three, four,
Yeah,
two, one.
Christmas,
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah,
sort
yeah.
of, yeah,
George's favorite.
Christmas tree in a pot, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, like, the last two home games, we've just abandoned that and gone to up top, and basically it's all on Kachunga to link everything. And I quite like Kachunga. Like, obviously, UTAS's very
He's a
own.
UTAS favorite, friend of the pod. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. But that's a lot for I don't. He's not really good enough to do that, is he? Like, he's a good player,
No.
but like, he's not good enough to do that all on his own. And we just end up in this situation again where there's like massive gaps between midfield and the strikers. And I guess he's done it for the same reason he did it against Charlton, because Derby are massive and like really physical, and he's like, we need to match them up, and the way to occupy their defence is to have two strikers on, which I can see the sense of it, and obviously it worked like to an extent against Charlton in that we got a point, but we didn't create a lot in that game at all either, did we? And we only scored a goal because it went through the keeper's hands, basically, which, you know, he'd probably back himself to save more often than not. So it's a bit of a shame, really, that, like, I know, like, clearly, we played the Christmas tree against Bristol Rovers and it was pretty dire, but you know, I feel like it feels like we've regressed a bit from the sort of Easter games where he really seemed to have, you know, come up with a good solution that made us look a little bit more fluid and a bit more joined up. And yeah, I don't know. Obviously, we'll come on to the Wigan game next, but it'll be interesting to see which way he goes, because I know Wickham are not there sort of like, ultra Gareth Ainsworth selves these days, but I suspect they are still quite a physical team. Whether he'll still think, I need two strikers on the pitch, I need to make us competitive in that way, sort of remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. That's a really good point, to be honest, about the two behind the striker, or the two strikers. It does seem yeah, an interesting choice, considering like how well we played over the Easter weekend, that you'd think maybe he had unlocked something there. It's also bringing the wing backs into play a little bit more, right? That like sort of connects everything up a little bit better, as Tom was saying. That's the thing that's lacking. And I mean, it might not have affected the result yesterday, as we've said already. But look, we've actually had a few questions on the style of play. James and Tom sent in a very similar question. Thanks everyone for your questions at Abbey Stand Pod on X. If you want to send anything in, Tom's asked to sprinkle or not to sprinkle. That's a question. Monk asked to keep the pitch dry for Charlton and Derby. Does that mean we're in for a season of watching scrappy direct football on tough pitches rather than something more entertaining? Matt, sort of like a little bit to your point, but do you think that's that those things are linked, like that we're seeing the Charlton Derby like playing two up top, trying to, like, I don't know, bypass midfield and play the ball more in the air and more direct, rather than, you know, playing it, not that against Wigan we were necessarily playing like this silky like tiki-taka football or anything, but do you think there's anything in that, like the style of play that Monk's talking about there?
I think it's possible that he's done that. This is such a it's so weird, this like dry pitch thing. I'm like, I just don't really know. It's kind of, I haven't noticed watching, to be honest. It's like to be more wobbly, but anyway, I don't think you can read too much into it in the long term, because I feel like he's just doing what he needs to do to, maybe this is an optimistic take from me, but I think he's just doing what he needs to do to get through the season, get the points we need. We're probably going to do it. Like, and if that involves like making sure that the ball doesn't zip around in midfield because we've got Digby and Cousins in there and they're not like ball players, then he's probably just doing that to give us as much advantage as we can get. But I feel like you see, like, with going to three at the back and wanting like Zeno to carry the ball out, or Job or whoever, or Danny Andrew, actually, who's been really important in that. That is, for me, that's the hallmark of a manager who wants to get us playing and probably will look to do that more than like Harris would have or Bonner would have. So I don't think it's like necessarily that we're sort of like, I think maybe he has done it on purpose, I don't know, but I feel like you can't read too much into it as a sort of long-term thing. I think he's probably going to try and make us play a bit more than the previous managers have.
Yeah, I think that's true. But also, crucially, as you just said, let's just get to the end of the season, figure it out in the summer. Anyway, let's leave that derby result behind us. Tom, let's actually rewind to Bristol on Tuesday night. You know, you'd think that that was done and dusted, but Saturday morning, the news came out that Chris Martin, not the Coldplay singer, received a 3-game suspension, rising to 4, I think, because of his yellow card. Because of how many yellows he was on, but for headbutting Mamadou Diop off the ball on Tuesday night. Now, this is really bizarre because, Tom, we were chatting. I don't have any memory of anything happening on Tuesday night. Not a little flare-up, not a little moment, nothing of any sort. It was the 41st minute. And then the video comes out, which I think friend of the pod, Matt Ramsey, has tweeted, if you go and find him on X. It's right in front of the away end. Like, it's really bizarre, isn't it, as a moment? Do you think it's something that we're going to look back on as a... I mean, obviously, he goes on to score the winner. Let's make that clear, 2 minutes before the end. And he should have been off straight red. Do you think it's something we'll look back on as a bad moment? And how is it that 4 officials managed to miss something as, like, as serious as this?
It's a really weird moment because, like you say, it's essentially right in front of us and we didn't see it.
Nothing.
And like there was no like reaction to this at all from the away because I don't think anyone noticed it. And also the weirder thing is that when you watch the video back, none of our players even noticed really.
No, obviously, it's almost Job doesn't notice. It's almost like he sort of like steps back and is like, all right, fine. Like,
he must have just been so shocked by it.
Yeah,
because like it's not like they're like going for a ball together and you know, Martin's just like left one in on him. He's literally just like totally off the ball, totally innocuous. He just turned around and headbutted him. Yeah, look, I think you can make the obvious point that Martin goes on to get the winner, and you know if he's not on the pitch, and I know it's really simplistic and all butterfly effect and whatnot, but if he goes off, he doesn't score the winner. Therefore, we get at least a point out of it. We might look back at the end of the season and say that was quite an important point that we could have got. But yeah, it's really weird. Like just in terms of the incident itself as well, like. There's no need for it at all.
No, there's nothing. You
know, well, I guess we've got to be a little bit careful about exactly what we say. But there is precedent for that stuff going a lot further than an FA ban. Because it's just well out of order. Like if you go into a pub and do it on a Saturday night, you get arrested.
Yeah.
Like and
but Martin's asked Chris Martin ABH or GBH, and like I sort of laughed at it at first, but I was like, well, I mean, yeah, if you walked into a
pub, you would.
If you walked like, into a pub and headbutted someone out of nowhere, you'd be in serious trouble.
If you do it, like, mate, this is it's quite phony and stuff, I guess. But
yeah, we're getting a bit 606, aren't we?
If you do it on the street, there's a good chance you go to prison.
Yeah,
it's true though, isn't it? And also, like, it's a 4-game ban. Well, I mean, like Lyle Taylor's one on Jack Ido wasn't necessarily that far off this, I guess.
Which one?
he only got three
that he had to pop it in for.
And like comparatively, like this is a much worse incident for Martin, and you know for it basically to be rewarded with having an early summer is very strange.
He's totally accepted it as well, by the way. So there's
I'm sure he has.
Yeah.
imagine he decided to.
Yes, I did headbutt him.
Yeah. If you look at this bit here, though, you can quite clearly see my face doesn't connect with him. So it's not.
Yeah.
It is very weird. I guess you have to add the balance and say that if we are relegated by one point, it won't be on the strength of that one evening at Bristol. So maybe it's not the be all and end all, but it certainly impacted that game. And at this point in the season, it's a very important game.
Yeah, and Job's out for the last 2 games as well. Worth saying.
It's a
concussion protocol.
Yeah, it's a real shame for him. But like, what can he do? Like, the weird thing as well is like, even like during the game, you didn't get the sense that was getting really heated.
No,
I don't think it wasn't one of those where you're like, oh, this is flaring up. Like something's going to happen in a minute.
I'd go a step further. That was like one of the least heated games of football I've like ever been to, especially in the first half. It was like a pre-season game. It was honestly, it's like, it's just such a bizarre incident, honestly. But look, like as you say, Tom, that isn't the thing that's gonna that we're gonna be ruining if we
got any Coldplay puns for it.
Well, I don't know. It was all yellow or something.
It shouldn't have been a yellow. It should have been two yellows.
Yeah, Matt's got something lined up.
I've got one. I've got one.
Is it better than that or worse?
Well, it remains to be seen. He's in trouble, though, isn't he?
Trouble. Is that a Coldplay song?
That is a Coldplay
yeah,
song.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It was definitely worse in retrospect. So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't really know Coldplay well enough to have any puns lined up. Sorry, Tom. Marvin has asked though, who's the bigger bell end, Chris Martin from Coldplay or Chris Martin from Bristol Rovers? Which did make me laugh. Anyway, moving on. Something before we get onto the Wigan preview. Let's talk about the player of the season, which seems bizarre considering. Not only have we got another home game left, but we're not yet safe in this division. So first of all, quick question. Matt, did you stay for the lap of appreciation yesterday?
Am I a bad fan if I say no, I did not do that.
You're at
the very least equal to us. I don't think I've ever left the ground earlier than yesterday for the full-time whistle. So I found out this morning, Liam Bennett won player of the season, surprisingly. Gassan won BBC Cambridgeshire Player of the Season, and Thomas won, I think, Community Player of the Season. I mean, David's asked, Tom, who would you have voted for Player of the Season? I guess Liam seems fairly obvious.
Yeah, I guess. It's a pretty thin rule, isn't it? There's not like loads of people that stick out. I think you'd probably have to give a mention to someone like Danny Andrew as well. I think quietly has had a pretty decent season. Obviously a pretty tricky start, which maybe in some people's mind is had made people's mind up about him, I guess. But I think he's been pretty reliable. Especially when you consider that he's played in a couple of different roles this season, particularly recently. Morrison's probably the other one who I think on most occasions has really been able to come away from games and think I've actually done my job pretty well there, even if people around them haven't. But even then, like you're talking about, like the amount of games that he's played and been a big part in, which have just been horrendous, is difficult. And I think, yeah, I mean, look, Liam Bennett's probably the only one who I think consistently most weeks has been sort of in the conversation, a man of the match. So I guess it's probably logical that he wins it. And it was never going to be anyone else, was it, I guess?
No, it wasn't. Matt, anyone else you want to shout out? I think Andrew and Morrison for me were the two that I was going to mention.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I would have given it to Danny Andrew because I feel like if he sort of, so much of our play goes through him, like he's always on the ball, like set pieces and in open play, like for better or worse. Like sometimes he contributes well and sometimes not, but he's had a pretty good season. Yeah. And I think he's been probably our more consistent of our two fullbacks. Having said that, like Bennett is obviously really fun to watch and, you know, it's nice to have a homegrown player in the team. I do think he's a little bit, I hate to use the word overrated. I think he's a great fullback for us, but I'm not convinced that he's going to go on and have a glittering career, like a higher level.
Yeah, not the £5 million West Ham move that people have sort of signed him up for already.
No, I feel like the next team he goes to, like, I'm sure, like, when he leaves us, he'll probably go to a bigger team, but I don't think he'll be, maybe a top. Sure. I feel like maybe top of league one's probably his limit, but that's not to say he's not a great right back for us, and he's had a really good season, and he's really fun to watch. So,
I'm
happy with him as player of the year, but I would have given it to Danny Andrew.
Has Danny Andrew also played every single game?
Yeah, he's played every game, yeah.
Has he played 90 minutes every game? No, he must have come off a couple of times. Yeah. Sure.
He definitely got hooked to Orient. That's what I know.
Oh, yeah. Good point, Tom. Yeah. Yeah, I did forget about that. Yeah.
It's probably fair to say that that wrote him out of any serious chance of winning player of the season that afternoon on its own. Maybe that's harsh, but I think that's probably what's happened.
It is easy. Like, I do really think his form has been, if you'd have got rid of how he started his career with us or his time with us that first month and especially culminating in that Orient game, I think he might be hands down for it because I do.
Can I be incredibly petty here?
It's never stopped you before, mate. Go on.
He actually started his career with us 12 years ago, mate. But
For God's sake. Yeah, all right. Okay. Well, maybe he was terrible 12 years ago. I can't quite remember.
He probably was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he's been the problem the whole time. Okay, look, let's let's wrap that up. Let's move on to Tuesday night, which is frustratingly a massive game for us. Before we talk about it, let's get a bit of insight from George from the Wickham Way podcast. Right, Yeez fans, delighted to be joined by George from the Wickham Way podcast to give us a bit of a lowdown on the goings on at Wickham Wanderers. George, thanks for joining us. First question, from the outside, it looked like Wickham were having a little bit of a tricky season, but then you think about the last month, your form's brilliant, and you only lost out to a last-minute goal thanks to a sort of a lucky cross at Wembley in the final of the Pizza Trophy. How's the season gone?
Yeah, rollercoaster one. Like you said, there's a blip between sort of October and December. We just could not buy a win. We weren't getting outplayed as such, but you know the goals weren't going our way, and we're going in our net. We were 17 winless, and it was just an absolute disastrous run. You know, we strengthened in January. We used the window that should be used. We got rid of an awful lot of deadwood and brought in some real quality. And results from there have picked up. I think we have 10 wins in the calendar year, 5 in the last 7 or whatever it is. You know, loads and loads of clean sheets. We've switched goalkeepers, which at the start was a brave decision, but it's paid off. You know, just we learned from the first half of the season. Formation wasn't working. We were conceding sloppy goals. We've dealt with it, improved, and it's been a really, really good sort of 2 or 3 months.
I assume that the standard thing in those, what do you say, 17 winless is that the manager gets the boot. But it sounds like there was obviously some loyalty shown to him. How has he sort of turned things around so drastically?
Any other club, he'd have been gone off the 10 or 12 games. The start of the run, we had some really tricky fixtures, and then it just sort of went to pot. You know, we weren't very good at all. And, you know, the fact that he's a Wickham legend and played 500 odd games here brought him a little bit of time, rightly or wrongly. But, you know, he used the market well. He's turned it around. He learned what he was doing wrong the first half of the season. We switched to a back four. We brought in some real quality at the back. You know, we brought in new forwards who knew how to score goals. You know, we've done that in recent weeks. So, you know, loyalty is rare in football nowadays. I think you've seen it yourself this season, haven't you? But, yeah. You know, the owners gave a bit of time. And rightly so, because it looks like it's paid off. And, you know, we're really excited for next season now.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be exciting to go into the summer with the sort of, like, momentum you've got. Do you think that momentum is something that you'll carry into, you know, your last two games, obviously starting with our fixture on Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, as good as the momentum is, it's probably not the time to build it up, really, because, you know, going into the summer, you're not playing. You're hoping that off-the-field business sort of carries on that positivity, and it's not always guaranteed. So, you know, it's a tricky one because we don't really want the season to end. It sounds ridiculous from a mid-table team, but, you know, we've really enjoyed the last few months. And so assuming that the summer business is good, then hopefully next season we have a better start than this season because it was absolutely naff. I think we won 3 of the first 10 or something, you know, built up a bit of steam, and then that really, really bad run where it looked like we were in trouble. So hopefully, you know, the business this summer will be good. We'll go into next season ready to go. And then hopefully we'll try and tackle that top six.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, just dealing with Tuesday night first, I guess. Obviously, as I mentioned, you've won 3 on the bounce, giving us a hand, really, beating Shrewsbury, Vale, big one, big hand there, and then Carlisle on Saturday. So sort of managing to easily dispose of the teams in the bottom six, which sort of worries me a little bit going into Tuesday. Who are the players we need to watch out for? Like, what sort of system are you playing, and how are you getting a lot of success against, you know, teams around us?
We just look short at the back now, and then we sort of overload the forward areas. You know, the attacking quartet we've got are really, really exciting. You know, Sadlier and McCleary and the wings have been around a number of years, really, really good players at this level. Richard Kone is a surprise package, signed him from the Essex Senior League in January. And, you know, considering the jump up in quality, he's really hit the ground running. You know, he looks like he's made for this level. I'm sure he's going to go further on with a bit of time and maturity. And then Bezal Abala, one of our January signings, has already turned into a fan favourite. You know, we don't concede many goals anymore, which is really, really good. We're really hard to break down. But the difference is between now and, you know, the start of the season is we're scoring at the other end. Like you say, we're beating the teams below us in the table. But, you know, it's a good feat considering the amount of miles we've done this week. I think a tweet went out the other day, we've done 1,200 miles in the last three games. You know, I don't think the Premier League managers could cope with that. So, you know, to do those miles and get three wins on the spin and, you know, three really quite comfortable wins, it is really, really good going.
Yeah, do you think, is there any, I mean, Hughes fans listening are really hoping that you were going to say like, oh yeah, we played well, but you know, we're sort of on the beach, like the flip-flops on, pina colada in hand. Is there any danger of that? Or do you think there's actually quite a lot of motivation for a team that, you know, you've not got much to fight for, except I guess a top half finish, which would obviously, is obviously nothing to sniff at. But it's not, you know, it's not the same as fighting for a playoff spot or to stay up or anything like that. But do you think there's any danger of, or you know, give us a bit of confidence going into it. Is there any danger that you might be a bit knackered and a bit on the beach?
The only thing that's going to toss out is the travelling, because there's an awful lot of it. But to be honest, the performances on the pitch of, you know, they're really high level. It looks like we're going to keep that going in the next few games. You know, the back end of last season was really, really poor, and I think that led to a bit of negativity going into the summer. I think the idea this time around is to get rid of that, go into the summer with positivity, and then that carries over into the start of next season. So to answer your question, I can't see us turning up and being a walkover. I think we're going there to get 3 points, to get as many as we can on the board. You know, we've got a lot of players out of contract. You know, they're still fighting for one next season. And so, you know, as much as there's nothing to play for in terms of the league table, there's plenty to play for individuals.
Yeah, of course. What's your prediction then for the game?
I want to see goals. I predicted a 4-4 at Carlisle, but they're not good enough going forward. I do want goals. Just one more big goal for us before the season ends. I want Wickham to win there, so I'm going to go for a 4-3.
Amazing. I mean, we've not had that prediction all season, but obviously I hope it's the other way around and it's a bit of a nuts game that sees us confirm our safety, but they're always good battles against Wickham. So thanks a lot for coming on and best of luck for next season, I guess.
Lovely. Thank you very much, mate. Thank you.
Thanks very much, George, for helping us out with that preview. George, as you'll hear there, is quite confident because it sounds like this Wickham team are actually quite good, much better than we want them to be for a team that are on the beach, but are, if you look at the form table of the last 10, they are sixth in that, 1-6, drawn 2, lost 2. Their away form in particular, they've in the last 6, won 4, drawn 1, lost 1, only conceding 4 goals in that time. They've obviously done us a lot of favours in their last 3 by beating Shrewsbury, Vale specifically, and Carlisle. Then you think about our Tuesday night record, just to remind listeners, that's Reeds. Played 16, lost 13, drawn 3. The last time we won was against Wickham, sure. Tom, that's a recipe for disaster, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't know what it is, and it seems almost irrespective of who their manager is. Just playing Wickham is just always thoroughly unenjoyable.
Mm.
And it always seems to come at a time in the season where you just could do without it, frankly.
This time last year as well. Do you remember we had them on a Tuesday night?
It was after Posh, wasn't it?
After Posh, well done, yeah. And it was like, winnable game. If you get 3 points here, you're well on track, right?
Did happen.
Lost 4-1, I think, that night.
Quite emphatically didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's fair to say. Yeah, look, this is a really tough game. It's one of those where, you know, I guess if you're looking for like a profile of a club to play, you know, at this point in the season, you want to play one of those teams in and around the middle with literally nothing to play for. But yeah, Wickham have kind of gone the other way with it, really. Particularly in the last couple of weeks, you know, 3 wins on the spin, all away from home against teams down the bottom of the table. So it's fair to say that they are quite adept at putting shite away, which may or may not be a good thing for us, I guess. Yeah, look, it's a really tough game, and it's kind of one where, I guess it kind of goes for every game at this stage of the season, right? But you just want the combination of what we do and what Cheltenham do to leave us no closer to the relegation zone than before it. And obviously, if that's the case, then we'll be safe. So, yeah, it's an important night. And I think, I do think it's kind of important that we get a win at home and just get the job done, because, again, like, this is, I guess, really, really painfully obvious, but literally the last thing that you want is to go to already relegated Port Vale on the last day of the season. with something to play for, like no matter how big or small that might be. Because at the moment, you know, if we obviously if we lose and Cheltenham win, you need to actually go and get something from that game, let alone you know, one of those situations where it's like just don't lose 4-0 or something. So that is a really that should be really the only motivation that's needed. It's, but we said that before Bristol Rovers, we said it before Saturday. Saturday's maybe a little bit harsh because obviously it's Derby and they're obviously a really good team. But yeah, look, there's a game there to be won. Like they've done well of late, but like, you know, they're 11th. Like they've got some good players, but they're not exactly like a world beating team, are they? They're there to be got at. And I'd like to think that that'd be kind of the mentality, really, is just simply just get it done in whatever way that needs to be. But hopefully it's with us just doing our job and not worrying too much about what happens elsewhere.
Yeah, totally. It's, I don't know how much of an impact these things actually have. You'd have to speak to someone, you know, more involved in the inner workings of a professional football club. They have, George mentions it there, but I've got the stat here. They have travelled the most of any team in the league, joint most actually, in the last 15 days. They've travelled 540 miles and then plus, you know, travelling to our place on Tuesday. Matt, is that a reason to be positive, or is there anything else that you're looking at? Do you think there's enough from us on Saturday?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm quite trepidatious about this game as well. I do think we're going to be safe by the end of Tuesday. This is how I'm feeling, but not through our own doing. I think that it'll probably be the other game that Cheltenham are in that will come to our rescue, because I'm really, yeah, I think like Tom was saying, just playing Wickham just fills you with dread at all times, doesn't it? And
yeah,
when you add in all the other factors, it's all set up for us to sort of fall to pieces. But maybe that won't be the case. Maybe we'll get a pleasant surprise. Maybe they'll put it in, you know, for the last home game under the lights, etc. And we'll get what we need. But yeah, not feeling optimistic in any way.
No, neither am I. The equation, as you've both sort of said, is quite simple. We've only got to match Cheltenham's result to be safe. That's it.
Easy.
We mentioned the fact that they're going to Posh, who simply do not want there. To win that it's match.
It's at home, first of all. It's at Cheltenham's place.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And what Tom was referring to there is Darren Ferguson, in pretty official avenues, has said that he'll be rotating the entire team for their trip to Cheltenham on Tuesday night as he prepares.
Of course he will.
Playoff.
I would expect nothing less.
And that is true. If anyone listening to this hasn't seen that, that is absolutely true. He said he said that he'll be refreshing the entire team, like the entire team. Starting 11 is going to be a team of reserves. Now, there's one thing to bear in mind here. Posh's reserves are still going to be pretty decent. Yeah. Cheltenham, like their home form is shocking. They've not won at home in their last six, I think, or I think it actually goes back even further than that. I don't have it in front of me right now. Tom, how ironic do you find it that there's a world in which we're kind of relying on favours from Posh and then potentially Stevenage on the last day to help us stay up?
Managerless Stevenage, that is.
Managerless Stevenage, who have got nothing to play for.
It's pretty unnerving, to be honest. Because I can't help but put myself in the shoes of someone like Darren Ferguson. Admittedly, not someone I want to spend much time. But like, if that was me, I would do exactly the same. In fact, I'd play actual children. I think I'd literally be going into like the sort of like the junior teams and pulling like 11 and 12 year olds out and just go on, get some grass on your boots sort of thing. Yeah, it's pretty horrible. I guess if you want to be a bit more positive about it and give a bit of balance, we're not necessarily relying on them. We're relying on ourselves, which is maybe more worrying. But yeah, it's a pretty galling situation to be in. I would say that this is maybe the one time where the riches that Posh have available to them should be a positive for us, because even a heavily rotated team should be better than Cheltenham. Like, you think, what is rotation for Posh? It's probably Johnson Clark Harris playing.
Yeah. No, I think it actually is.
Yeah. Level. And you'd like to think that if he plays, he probably scores, and therefore that's
1-0. You'd at least. You'd also like to think that some of those players are getting rotated, get a chance to impress for a playoff campaign, right? And if I don't know. Yeah, Clark Harris goes and scores a hat-trick on Tuesday night. I really, I stop laughing.
You're not even convincing yourself here, are you? Let alone anybody else. I can literally hear the resignation in your voice.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It's quite impressive to hear a man try and convince himself live on air that he genuinely believes that Posh are going to go to Cheltenham and do us a favour.
Oh, it's brutal. Matt, Alex has asked, how important is it to get the job done by 10 p.m. on Tuesday? The last day throws up some daft outcomes, such as last season. Steve similarly has asked, is there a chance we can do a reverse Cambridge and get relegated, not saved on the last day? You've already sort of shown your cards. You think we're safe Tuesday. And is that, what's your prediction? Do you think we lose and Cheltenham lose as well? Or
I think that we will lose and Cheltenham will draw. And that makes us safe, right?
Yeah.
Is it important to get it done on Tuesday? I mean, it would be better, like, for everyone involved, I think, but...
Wouldn't it be nice to just have a day out? Where we just don't have to think about things.
Imagine it is until you realise that day out is going to be spent in Burslem, which is quite miserable at the best of times. Even if you had the title wrapped up and it was just pure party atmosphere, that would put something of a downer on your time out, I think.
Stoke is truly one of the worst places I've ever been. I'm not even exaggerating.
Like, well, mate, anyway. Don't worry. 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, just been relegated. That is going to be the worst place. That's going to be hell on earth.
Sorry to any Stoke or Port Vale fans listening. What are you doing with your lives? I think it would be better to get it done on Tuesday, but at the same time, like, you remember, it's obviously massively different circumstances, but in the promotion season, we were like one game away from promotion for like about 3 games, and we got it done in the end. The only thing, much better team. Yeah, true. But yeah, like, we just need to get it done. Like, we just need a point. Like, and I think we're all sitting here being quite negative, but realistically, if we were like Cheltenham fans and the shoe was on the other foot, none of us would think Cambridge are going to blow it. We would all think, oh, Cambridge are going to get a point here. Mm-hmm. Like, it is massively likely that we will not get relegated. Trying to convince myself of that as well. But do you know what I mean? Like,
we should
be able to get this done. It's just a point, like, we're in all likelihood. And I would prefer that we go down on Tuesday, but if it has to go to Saturday, I'm still relatively confident we'll be fine in the end. Even if it won't be that pleasant.
What we haven't mentioned as well is like Burton being in between us, so they also have to win. Yeah. So there is like that part of the equation as well. I'm just looking forward to it being done. Just like put me out of my misery. The waiting around is the limbo is painful. Very quickly then, what team would you play on Tuesday, Matt? Would you go back to that Christmas tree and bring maybe Brophy Kaikai in?
Yeah, I would definitely bring Kaikai back in because I feel like he's not like the most consistent, but you sort of always bet on him to kind of do something, like create a chance or score a goal, like relative to the rest of our squad. So I would go back to that. If Gassan's up to it, to play in like up front on his own, I would go back to that. I would bring Kaikai and Lancaster in probably because I feel like Lancaster must be reasonably fresh. He hasn't had many minutes recently. And he's, looked all right off the bench, and he just gives something a bit different, doesn't he? Just a bit better ball retention, maybe try, doesn't always work. But I feel like that's a better solution to us to try and create chances to have him in the team. So, we'll see. I'm now thinking back and thinking that he missed like a massive chance against Wickham in the other game, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
I think, yeah. So maybe have him creating the chances, not trying to score them. But
perfect.
I would have him in the team, yeah. So probably something like that.
Tom, anything from you? Lyle Taylor against one of his former clubs?
Yeah, I took the words right out of my mouth. I want to see Lyle Taylor starting on Tuesday. And I'm not really sure of the way to put this politely, but I don't really care about their long-term fitness.
Yeah.
Because I just want to see us get over the line. I'm kind of the opinion that a lot of the out-of-contract players, most of them will leave anyway. So let's just run them absolutely ragged while we can and get it done as soon as possible. I think Lyle Taylor's one who... this has been proven, I think, in a positive and a negative sense, does thrive on a certain type of reception, I think. And I'm not sure that Wickham fans will be too positive with him, I guess. So, that's the sort of thing that might motivate him. And frankly, like, for someone like that, like he'll be playing for next season, like whether that's with us or trying to earn a contract elsewhere. And the best way of doing that is for him to show himself at his best, I suppose. So yeah, I think that's one that I would like to see. I think is Lyle Taylor starting. I agree with Matt. I'd quite like to see Kai Kai in there. Just offer something a little bit different. I'm kind of torn about whether I'd like us to go back to the Christmas tree or kind of stick with two up front. I sort of feel like a Hadme and Taylor up front would be a real handful for any defence, really. So I'd like to see that. And I guess with Kai Kai just behind. So that's pretty much the only change that I think I would really make. I wouldn't be, you know, hugely surprised or kind of upset to see maybe a little bit of a shuffling of the pack at centre back. But, you know, obviously our options there, as we've just discussed, are maybe a little bit more limited with Morrison being injured and Job having been headbutted out of the season by Chris Martin. So, yeah, probably not loads of things that we can do realistically. I think it's just a case of who starts up front and how many start behind them.
How are you feeling about it score-wise?
Well, having just sat here and listened to the both of you try and convince yourselves it's all going to be okay, you've done a pretty poor job, to be fair. not overwhelmingly positive, but I think that, you know, we should hopefully have enough about us, given what we've talked about with the way that we've competed better in these games and, you know, the fact that hopefully in the top end of the pitch, we've at least got options available to us in terms of the personnel. I'd like to think we've got enough about us to get something out of the game. I think I'll probably go along with what Matt said, really. I think I could see us drawing and Cheltenham drawing as well, and it's been kind of done from there, which obviously we'd all absolutely take right now. I can't really see us winning the game just because I feel like it's been proven on so many occasions that when we go Saturday, Tuesday, and the Saturday game is one where we have to really exert ourselves, it just leaves us a bit short going into Tuesday. But I guess in a positive sense, I do feel like I've kind of seen enough to think that we can limit Wickham a little bit. That truly could be famous last words. But yeah, we'll see. I think I would back us to, and I would take a point.
Cool. Yeah, I'd probably take a point as well. Okay. Well, that's maybe slightly cheerier than where we started the pod. Look at this. Good bit of therapy session. We've had a lot of questions on the retained list. We are going to save that for an end of season pod once we know our fate a bit better, rather than go into that now. So look forward to that. Matt, always a pleasure having you on, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I swear to God, Matt, if Lyle Taylor gets sent off on Tuesday and then Gary leaves on the Wednesday morning, you are never coming back on.
I'm on the blacklist if I take another manager down. So yeah. Sorry in advance.
Tom, always a pleasure, mate.
Yeah, isn't it just?